Welcome back to the A24 podcast. After a brief hiatus, we're excited to share this conversation between friends and collaborators Daniel Kwan, Daniel Scheinart, and Daniel Radcliffe. The trio recently met up over Cheesecake Factory takeout to talk about a potential Swiss Army Man reunion and the relentless optimism of the Daniels' Everything Everywhere All at Once. Enjoy the episode and don't miss Everything Everywhere, out on digital and Blu-ray, July 5th.
All right, you go first.
Hello, listeners. I'm Daniel Scheinert.
And I am Daniel Kwan.
And I'm Daniel Radcliffe.
We're all named Daniel.
That's easy.
Yeah.
And this is our podcast.
No, this is the A24 podcast.
Oh, yes. We were talking on the A24 podcast. So now we're in a studio in Highland Park. I skated here. Did you bike here?
I drove. I was running errands. But Normally I bike everywhere.
Yeah. This is like just down the street from where we live.
So nice.
Thank you for coming to our neighborhood.
Oh, no. Thank you for It's very close to where we're filming.
Cheesecake Factory was brought to the table.
Yes. Thank you for that.
Are you a fan of that restaurant?
Yeah, huge. It's I
what
feel
a surprise!
Like...
I didn't know that when we got our friend to buy cheesecake and bring it to the interview.
I feel like it's one of those things that like Americans see as like, I don't know, like people like enjoy it ironically or something, and people like are kind of weird about it or think it's like, I'm like, it's fucking amazing. It's got the biggest menu in
yes,
the world.
This is true.
It has cheesecake the size of, you know, your arm. And I love it.
You know, sometimes you meet someone, you're like, oh, this person's like me. We're in, of the same world. We have a very similar, you know, sensibility. And then you said one thing that just kind of like made my like antenna go up. Like, wait a minute. We were talking about ordering burgers and you said, well, we got to have American cheese on the burgers. And that's like totally the opposite of my household. It's like American cheese is disgusting. And we put cheddar cheese on. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And so that was the beginning of me realizing
and
slowly.
You love American cheese.
I mean, I love all cheese.
Right.
My wife.
You
is,
love junk food and fancy food.
Exactly. Yeah. I do everything. I don't discriminate. But my wife is so anti-American cheese that we never have in the house. And, and I thought, you know, Harry Potter, very fancy. He would never want never want American cheese, right? Someone on your team let us know that your favorite restaurant was Cheesecake Factory because your birthday was coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And John Wong, our producer, is like, I got the best gift idea. We're going to give you a VIP tour of the tasting kitchen, the experimental tasting kitchen at Cheesecake Factory. Yeah.
Did you do that? Did you go to the tasting
kitchen? No. I do not know. That was a
man,
thing.
Oh, man, they tried.
No, they
Wait,
tried.
There was a whole behind-the-scenes thing.
And honestly, like, I like eating that. I don't know if I would need a whole tour, but that was...
It probably got vetoed before it even got
Somebody
to
Somebody else was probably like, nah, he just wants to eat a lot. That's not... He doesn't need
That's
all
so
that.
Funny. I think we've told a lot of people over the years
that
you definitely went, you know? Fake
That's
news.
Really funny.
But
so you
now
heard
we
it
have
first.
To,
That's a
Now
lie.
We have to make another movie together so we can all go to the tasting right. kitchen, because personally, I actually really want to know what they're working on.
I mean, I would go with you guys. When it was like... If it was like a private tour for my birthday, I would just feel like, I don't know, that level of attention would be weird walking into
okay,
a room.
Okay, guys in the booth, cancel the tour. All the drivers say it's off. Oops. We got to find something to talk about because we're not going to Cheesecake Factory now.
So this is also the first time I've seen you since I saw your movie. It's like, congratulations. It is truly like one of the best things I've ever seen, and it made me so happy. And it's weird to have what is now one of my favorite films made by people I know, but it's really cool. So it just like, it was such a pleasure.
I don't know how to respond to that in a genuine way on audio. Mm-hmm. I feel like
just go
thank you. it's really beautiful that, you know, people we respect like you have been responding to the film this way, but at the same time,
but also knowing you, it's
It makes sense.
Yeah, we made it being like people like our buddy Daniel are gonna love this, but it's the most confusing compliments are ones that come from like places we don't expect, like, you know, middle aged women who are like, "What? Finally, a menopause story that I feel seen by." And we're like, "Whoa, cool!
Good."
Well
right. done, you.
For a little context, a journalist actually saw the movie and responded to it by writing an article about how they're like, basically, I know this is not what the director's intention was, but watching it as a woman going through menopause, this is menopause on the screen, and I'm so here for it. And so she wrote this whole article about
that. Amazing. I feel like what I love about that movie and what I love about Swiss Army Man and just what you guys do is that you do stuff that deals with like the biggest ideas that you can deal with, but it's fun. Like, there's no reason that it doesn't have to be, like, fun more or less the whole time. And, yeah, I mean, I was going to ask about the butt plug fight scene. Like, when, just in terms of the logistics of, like, talking that through with the stunt guys for the first time,
yeah.
Like, how well did you know them? How well did they know what they were going to be doing before they got to set? Like, I really, yeah. I want to know.
We could spend the whole next hour.
You know? I know. First of all, you were in Swiss Army Man, so you kind of know what that's like. Everything.
Did you ever feel like we really sprung things on you? You're like,
not really. That in my mouth? Like, not particularly. Like, I feel like when I talk to people about working with you, I say that, like, every day, I would get to set with a question of, like, how are we going to do that? And then every day was, like, a delightful discovery of what the answer to that would be.
That was fun that we didn't tell you how we were going to execute it. A lot of times we weren't sure until right up until it.
Right.
But, yeah, was always fun.
Yeah, it definitely, like, never felt sprung on me as much. Because also there's no, like, with that character as well, it felt like we were all, like, finding it all the time and working out what it was or should be all the time.
Yeah.
When we made that molding that you referenced earlier, was that sprung on you? Did you have an idea? Did you know we were going to come in there and ask for that?
I knew it was. I've done, like, molding processes before, and I don't think this ended up happening, which I did get a little sad about, was that originally, we're talking about a mold that was made of my butt, for anyone that is wondering.
so that we could blast, like, inhuman amounts of air through a realistic butt.
But at one point, it was talked about that there would be, like, an actual engine put inside it. I feel like that was referenced maybe at some stage.
We tried to make a rideable corpse. Yeah. Because there's, like, self-driving surfboards out there. And we were like, can we get one of those and put the corpse around it and actually make a rideable one with the butt out?
Yeah,
and
it did not work.
It didn't work
out. But then I'm kind of glad that didn't work, because maybe then I wouldn't have got to do as much of being actually in the water as I did, which is still one of the favorite things that I've ever done.
Yeah,
that one shot was kind of magical, especially because we had the music blasting from, like, these big speakers. I don't know if you remember, but, like, music, and Paul was shouting on top of you, and it was actually a little scary, because there's a couple moments where I'm like, oh no, are we gonna drown getting a record? Like, sometimes the wave would just hit you just
guys were,
right,
like, really bouncing.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes you like get pulled under, and I'm like, oh god.
Or Paul's gonna bounce up and then land on your head.
But so it, you know, that was what this movie was like. So with the, you know, I call it the trophy fight, you know, for the,
I'll start referring to it that way.
No, it's okay. There's something kind of performative about the whole thing where you're like, okay, we have to do this very silly thing, but it takes a lot of effort. You're fighting entropy. You're spending a lot of money. There's a lot of bodies that have to be, you know, working together and collaborating to just make sure that this fight works. And you start to just forget that it's funny. You know, it's like you're like,
you look over at the people who aren't working that hard, and they're all dying laughing.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh right, this is funny.
I mean, that's reassuring. Yeah, that must be. Yeah.
Because, like, it's like a very technical fight scene as on top of it. So we're like, okay, safety is really important. How do we create harnesses that create the right angle, or the illusion of the right angle, you know, while they can fight comfortably, and if they accidentally fall, they're not going to hurt themselves. You know,
Our props master just kept having follow-up questions about the trophies when he first came on, Josh, and we were like, there's a lot of props in the movie. Like, can we talk about something else? And he was like, no, this is the most complicated scene in the movie. You know, like, if I get this wrong, like, someone will get hurt, you know, and he was like, there can be zero sharp edges. I need to make a trophy that looks like wood and marble that is all rubber, and like, we need to, the first week of his job, he's like, we gotta pick the plug, you know, so I can go make doubles and you know, which was, it was so funny, you know, he read it and immediately saw it was gonna be hard.
We promised ourselves we wouldn't talk too much about our own movie.
No, but, I came here today with, like, questions and stuff.
This is allowed.
And it is, you know, what was the other thing I was going to ask about? But did they have any, like, were they stunt guys or were they actors as well?
So Andy and Brian, with the trophies in their butts, are the fight choreographers. So, found them on YouTube when we were trying to find someone to do the fight choreography, because we really wanted it to be unique and Hong Kong style, and that's what they do, is they have a fan page, like, where they they and their friends in Orange County just make kung fu movies.
Awesome.
So we brought them on and started doing the fights and fell in love with them and their work. They're so hyper and funny and weird. And so then we were like, guys, we wrote a part for you. We literally wrote that scene pretty late in the process, and they were like, oh my god, and we're like, you're gonna fight Michelle Yeoh, and they're like, oh my god, and we're like, you got big butt plugs and in your butts for the whole fight scene, and like they did not laugh, they were not excited, they were like what, they weren't sure if we were pranking them,
right? Yeah,
but this is weeks in advance, you know.
Yeah. Good.
And then they spent so much more time choreographing that fight than any other fight because they were so excited about their scene,
right?
And so the final scene is like, once it's two of them, it's like 1 minute, you know, of fighting. But the longer previs they did is like 6 minutes. Like they just kept, and they like over Christmas break, they were like, we hung out with friends, we came up with more stuff. And they sent over an even longer version of the fight. And we're like, we'd have to spend a month, you know, to shoot all this.
How much of what you did as well in the action of that movie is only achievable because you had like stars that could really do it?
Mm.
Like, cause it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely made it more fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could try face replacement and body doubles.
Oh, God,
but like,
yeah, but no, you'd have to be cutting in so much. Yeah, it's just so cool to watch.
That was always from the beginning, we're like, let's only cast people who are physical in some way. Yeah. Which is, you know, Ki Hui Kwan, we looked him up and we're like, oh, he's a black belt in Taekwondo. This is going to be perfect.
Which is all kicking.
Yeah, exactly.
So then we were like, it's sort of like nunchucks. And he's like, I have never. And we're like, sorry. There's no kicking.
Radcliffe, do you know martial arts?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Have you ever wanted to do one of these kind of movies?
Yeah, I mean, if there
I feel
could
like
ever
you're
be
very
role,
physical.
Maybe.
Like
I throw myself around like so happily.
Right. We know that you're good at getting beat up.
I'm really good at getting beaten up. I said that to somebody. We were doing a fight scene at the start of the season of Miracle Workers, and we were coming in for it, and I said to the stunt coordinator, like, I love being on this side of a fight. I love getting hit. I'm really good at it. And he was like, okay. And then we did the first thing, and he came up to me after. He was like, you were not lying. You really are. You really like enjoy getting hit. But I did, you know, one of my best friends on Potter was my stunt double. And so we hung out at lunchtime, like pretty much every lunchtime. And we would just do like hit cells and like, you know, learning how to do all that kind of stuff and like flips off around. Right. He would have me like jumping off. He was having me like jump off porter cabin roofs and stuff and do stuff that like he probably shouldn't have done, but it meant that the stunt department like trusted me to do stuff that I don't really get to do anymore because most stunt coordinators wouldn't let. When I look back and realize what stunts I did as a child, like, I also realize how weird it is that I also like had a child stunt. I had Davey was a stunt was my stunt double, and he was like 17. But I also had a stunt double that was the same age as me. He was a young gymnast called Tolga, which again I don't think I've ever seen that since.
Yeah, like I've never seen that. That's kind of amazing. But yeah, we said earlier that like this is the kind of movie that someone like your brain would totally just love. And I think the reason why we say this is because like you're a very unique person on set, or you're a very unique person in general, but the way that you're so curious, and you also the way you talk, you can actually keep up with me in China. We talk too fast and there's too many ideas or whatever, and you're like one of the few people who are like on that level where you're like you have so much curiosity and so many questions and so whatever, which is like kind of the pace of this movie is that. And like
yeah, everyone kept talking about like how rapid the movie was, and I didn't find it that way at all. Like I was just like, oh no, isn't he, like, you know, because it is, but you also do so much, like, you know what's going on at every stage. Like, it's such clear, it's such clear storytelling. And like, yeah, sorry, I'm going to stop talking about you. But no, it's just like, I like to think of myself like as quite an optimistic person. And it is like, despite, but also somebody who realizes that like, you know,
you see how awful, yeah, you see all the awfulness, and yet,
yeah, and just decide. Like the, you know, it is, you made a film that is, I think, like the greatest case for optimism that I've seen made, and the funnest case for optimism that I've seen made. And it's the same thing with Swiss Army Man. When you get to be a part of like telling a story, the way I felt about Swiss Army Man at the time was, when you get to be a part of saying something about the world that you couldn't quite, that you believe, but you could never have articulated in this way.
Yeah.
That's like the dream as an actor. Oh my God. Getting to be a part of telling that story is like, that you couldn't honestly like tell yourself. That's it.
Wow. I really appreciate that compliment. Do you remember?
Do you remember when everyone walked out of the film at Sundance?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Whoa! Have we? Yeah,
I feel like
digested that.
Yeah, because I was like, what? How did you feel about that? Because I was in my head going like, wait, I didn't expect this. I literally, but I've forgotten that we'd made a weird movie, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That definitely happens to us. I love that you forgot. That means you really, we brainwashed you, that means.
Yeah. But I think you just, when you see so much in something, you just expect naively that everyone will see the same things that you do.
It's, you know, we were in a similar place where we could hear the screaming, like as the farting corpse moment was happening at the beginning of the movie, I could hear people yelling and screaming and laughing. And it was just like all the animal noises that humans make, because literally no one at Sundance knew that it was a comedy. Like we pitched it. Yeah. We kind of like stupidly was like, this is a drama. It's a Sundance drama with two actors you love. And then we kind of pulled like this massive prank on this, like, you know, indie festival. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, I wonder, are those good sounds or what are, you know, my mm-hmm. sister even told me, my sister was sitting next, you know, two seats next to me, down from me. And she was laughing, but also looked scared for me. You know, she was like screaming and laughing, but it was like genuine. It wasn't like she was forcing a laugh. She was like, screaming, yeah, laughing, scared all at once. I was like, wow, this is, fantastic. This is why we made the movie, I guess. I had a really hard time sleeping for the next couple nights. And I remember we were doing Q&As because of course you have to go through a bunch of screenings while you're at a festival. And after a Q&A, an older gentleman who is maybe in his 60s, maybe even a little bit older, he had, you know, white hair, he came up to us and I was like, oh boy, what's he going to say? And he's like, hey, I read all the press and I saw the headlines. And I was like, so curious, because I was like, what is this thing? I thought it was just going to be like a silly thing. And I watched it and I was like, this movie is about loneliness. And this movie is clearly, like, he's like, I'm listening to you guys talk at the Q&A. Clearly you guys care about this movie. And basically, like, pointed at us and was like, don't let the press take the movie away from you. Fight back and use your words to try to sell the movie for what it is.
Yeah,
and
I think he specifically liked a speech you had just given in the Q&A, where he was like, the way you talk about the movie is
not important. How the press,
you know? Yeah. And so then Dan was off to the races, and he's like, I'm going to talk about the movie my way!
Exactly. Well, because, like, going into the process, I was like, let the movie speak for itself. And we tried that, and it was failing. And this guy, like, inspired us. And so I stayed up all night that night just writing essays, just different responses, different things that I could say that would kind of, you know, in a kind of obnoxious way, like make it just very philosophical and pretentious, honestly. It's like, how pretentious can I be about this? Because it's all real. It's all true. Right. Like, we really thought about all the philosophical implications of the movie. And it was fun and weird. And then slowly things started to change. And we sold to A24. And then we won the Best Directing Award. And, like, it didn't make any sense to people outside of the festival. But it was kind of like, I don't know, like, what was your experience that week? That was
it was so clear to me that there was stuff in there that was, like, obviously, like, silly and there's fart jokes, but it was so obvious. It was so obvious to me that there was, like, such a beautiful film in there as well, that was also just, like, fun and crazy and, like, nothing I had ever seen, that I was just certain that, not that everyone would like it, but that it would find enough people in that room. And then I remember a couple of days before going to the festival, there was like an article in Vanity Fair that was like 20 movies from Sundance that you'll see at the Academy Awards next year. And we were on that list. And I was like, yeah, you don't know what kind of film we've made.
Yeah.
And because, like, you know, we made a really cool film, but like the Academy, it's not a film that like the Academy is going to be like cool.
They're not usually into boner.
Although, like, and naively, throughout the entire press tour, and to this day, I maintain that the soundtrack should have been nominated.
Yeah,
it's one of the greatest movie soundtracks.
You and the soundtrack sure did a good.
The band's name is Andy. And, yeah,
Andy Robin.
Yeah, and but just like the, I don't know of a soundtrack that more like informs a film and like goes. But anyway,
I just wanted them to perform it live at some award show somewhere, you know, and for you to come out, you know, and for us to ride you into a theatrical production of the opening number or something, you know, that would have been one day.
The
50th. I don't want to make a sequel, but I would put it on Broadway.
Okay. You
know, if financiers out there
want to see a Swiss Army Man 2 on Broadway.
Yeah. It's going to be like Gallagher. It's going to be like, you get messy. Front row seats are a mess. It's gross.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the original cast. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Smell-o-vision.
Oh, no.
But so haunting.
But yeah, no. And then after that, I think I had like, I don't remember at what point I remember that there was like a midnight screening, and you guys came back from that and were like, that was the crowd. Like, people dug it there.
Oh, yeah.
And then I don't know if that was lies to make me feel better, but...
No, there were two midnight screenings that both went great, but one of them was an unforgettable screening because an hour before the screening, because, like, the movie starts at midnight, so the Q&A is at, like, 1:45 in the morning. Kwan was top five drunkest I'd ever seen him, like 30 minutes before the Q&A.
And, amazing.
Yeah, and Zoe Kazan was like interviewing him, like we were hanging out with her and Paul.
It was like practice interviews while
yeah,
I was drunk.
We were like, cool. let's see how drunk he is. And she was like, Daniel, what's your favorite food? Do you remember what you said?
I only remember because you've told this story so many times, but you I don't said remember cause, my mom's meatballs.
Yeah, but you went like, my mom's meatballs. And like,
but my mom doesn't even make meatballs. I don't know where that came
it was just,
from.
You just liked how it sounded coming out of your mouth.
I guess so.
Yeah. And so our manager, Josh, was like, don't, he can't do that Q&A. Nope.
Did he?
Like, and so I went and talked to Dan. I was like, hey, I think I'm going to do Q&A by myself. And he's like, okay, yeah, makes sense. And
then, I mean, at least you were not like an obstreperous drunk being like, no, I must do the Q&A.
Except 2 minutes before the Q&A, Dan walked up to me and was like, I feel better. And I was like, what's up? And he was like, I feel a lot better. And I was like, tell me more. And he just very articulately described how he was feeling. And I was like, let's do it, bro. And so we still did the Q&A. And he did great, except he stared at the floor the whole time.
Right. I thought in my head, I was like, oh, man, I totally killed that. But then I saw a picture of myself.
You're just like slumped.
I'm literally just like, my neck is like, just my shoulders are higher than my head. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm like,
oh, that's so funny.
The stress of that week was taking its toll on us in different ways.
And then I sort of just remember like it finding people and getting the impression that like the people that were loving it absolutely fucking loved it.
I mean, immediately because of the backlash, it was the hardest ticket to get, which was flattering.
Yeah.
It was just hard to know if that meant that the financiers were going to make back none of their money and we'd never get to make another one. But I knew that people would go. I don't know. I was less depressed, but it was so confusing.
Oh, gosh.
And I have a new bit of information that I want to put out into the world.
Wow.
Which is
hot take.
My mom missed the premiere. Her flight got delayed.
Oh, yeah.
And so she got there like 40 minutes late and just sat in the lobby listening and watched people leave from the lobby.
Jesus.
Brutal.
And I've always known this and it's always been so sad to me. It's like my mom just sat and watched the walkouts instead of watching the movie.
That is really painful.
And by her count, it was like 12 or 15 people.
Hey.
But she arrived 40 minutes late. So she missed the mass exodus.
Well, I don't
not
know.
Mass exodus. Like, that's the thing. I don't... I'm sure it did feel bigger in
I think
heads.
It wasn't that many.
Well,
I think
the
it was
Eccles
like...
Eccles Theater can hold like 1,300 people.
Yeah, there were like 1,300 people and she saw 12 leave and I was like, what?
Yeah.
So I think it was an overblown headline that just, you know, was viral and that's fine.
It worked. It worked for us.
And people walk out of every movie.
And honestly, now I was saying, like, other than Harry Potter, which is obviously its own special circumstance, Swiss Army Man is undoubtedly the film that I feel in the world most of, like, affecting people's lives the most out of everything I've done. Like, you do. Yeah, people talk to me about it all the time. Mm. It's about loneliness and it's about love and there are so many people that have referenced it in conversations to me that it's kind of cool to see something have, like, to go on that journey with something so quickly.
My favorite kind of reaction to our movie is when people who loved Swiss Army Man are really disappointed in Everything Everywhere All at Once. Yeah, it's a very
Does that person exist?
They're out there. They're going to comment on the
exactly.
There
are a lot of people who love, because like Swiss Army Man is a very specific movie, and they're the right people. It just hits them in the right frequency. So
I guess. I mean, that is a.
And then there's other people who, because of the new one, are revisiting Swissy, which a lot of times on second watch, you know, like you is a lot less of a shock value experience. And that's interesting to read about. But
my favorite reaction to it was that I think it was performed on like the Russian version of So You Think You Can Dance.
Oh, my God, that's a gorgeous YouTube video. Listeners, Google this.
Yeah.
It's like it's a really beautiful dance piece, too, which is
amazing.
Part of the Broadway experience is going to incorporate that kind of, dialogue-free, long stretches of dance. Yeah.
The reason why I've been reflecting on that night is because, you know, 4 months ago, we just premiered our movie at South By, and it's like... It's kind of bizarre. You've probably, I don't know, Radcliffe, maybe you've experienced this feeling, but I've never felt this way before. I felt so complete as a human being the night of the premiere. And it's so bizarre. Like, it's, you know, you're always searching for distractions, or you're always searching for something that isn't right in front of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we live in an age where that gets put onto the phone, you know. So now we use the phone to scratch that itch. And it was like one of the only nights in a long time, maybe my entire adulthood, where I did not look at my phone a single time. You know, I just like, we watched the movie. It felt great. We did the Q&A. And then the rest of the night, I was just floating. And my brain kept saying, everyone that matters to me is here. Well, yeah, my family was there. My crew was there. And the movie did great. And I felt so alive and so like I was like, oh, this is peaking. This is what that feels like. And I didn't even read the reviews. I didn't know what the response was necessarily. But like, I was so proud of the film. And I don't know. Did you?
When in your career have you felt that?
No,
you've
been there yet? I've absolutely never had that.
Whoa, okay.
No, 100%. Yeah. But that's awesome.
Like, what about the last Harry Potter film? I will keep bringing
it back. No, because I was like a 21-year-old. Oh, okay. Like, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was so far from a complete person
right,
then. Yeah. But also, I think you experienced, you know, sort of fulfillment and like artistic fulfillment in a way that you... I don't think it's necessarily possible for an actor to in the same way, because you are communicating something to the world of like your deepest self. And sometimes that happens in acting, but when you have generated the idea and told this story in this specific way, and you're feeling like the world seeing that and receiving it in the way and getting something out of it that you wanted, like that's... And like, I think... I have come close to that feeling, and when you see your work affecting people in a positive way, it does have that. But I think knowing that one can write and direct things, I don't think I'll ever, like, I think I might feel that one day if I do that, but I don't think,
we should talk about that later. Yeah. Mm. I want to talk about the Radcliffe directing path one day.
Hopefully. I mean, that's,
Well, because actually before we get there. Sure. Shiner, what was your night like that night? Yeah. I'm just curious now. This is fun. It's so indulgent.
Mine was weirder.
It was so indulgent.
The premiere was great, but I was like kind of shell shocked afterwards. Like, and the Q&A was weird, and then the after party was weird again. And for me, just we're gonna brag about South By a lot, but the night after the premiere, we had people still in town come over to our shared house, which we did again, like we did it for Swissy, because we were like, that was so nice to have a place that wasn't like public. It was like, great, let's just have people over. So we were able to do that again, and it was pretty low key. We had a very emotional conversation with Michelle that night, and then Ki Kwan showed up with sake,
five bottles of it.
And he had already established this tradition where he loves to like have people give speeches and drink a little bit of sake.
Cool.
And so we're like, oh, we'll do that. You know, we'll do that again. We've done it before. But this night, like very quickly, the speeches got so emotional and everybody just took turns giving emotional speeches and crying. And it felt like a wedding for a movie. Except Dan and I never gave speeches. Mm. And so it was just like we were the married couple. Right. We were the bride and groom. And then everybody else, you know, so John Wong, our producer, just started sobbing, talking about how much the movie meant to him and his dad, who's the movie's dedicated to. And then Steph Shu gave a speech about what it felt like, you know, to know that little girls like her would see. I'm stealing their speeches. I'm not gonna never mind. I'm not gonna fucking
do all of that.
Anyway,
speeches.
Yeah. But it was fucking insane. It was like I felt like I've never had a night like this. And there were like three or four people there that night who didn't work on the movie, and they looked so confused, and they were just like, all the rest of us were like,
that's on them.
It was a wedding, but it was actually more like, it felt more like a frat party, which I know is like a lot of bad connotations, but like the way that people were chanting for people to cry, they'd
be like,
cry, 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 because it was a safe space and everyone knew each other that we could just be aggressively.
But like Larkin came in and gave a speech,
but he was sober.
He showed up sober at the door, and we were like, come in. Everyone chanted speech, and he didn't even know it was supposed to be an emotional speech night. And then he like teared up
immediately.
He was like, I'm proud of you guys.
He said three words and started crying. I was like, what the fuck is this night?
You just could feel it.
Anyways.
Anyway, that was, I feel like the artistic highlight, since we're, you know, of Swiss Army Man, was at the end of the very first week of shooting there in Half Moon Bay, when we all went out to karaoke.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, I couldn't believe.
Oh, my God. That was so fun.
I couldn't believe that we were shooting the movie. I couldn't believe it had actually happened, that you guys had showed up and we'd shot, like, that you'd barfed water. And, like, yeah. It was like week one, we got a lot of the weirdest gags,
yeah,
like, of the whole montage out there. And I was just like, this is real. And the whole crew was, like, trauma bonded from how hard it was that week. But also we weren't, like, too tired, which by the end of the shoot, we were, like, shells of ourselves.
Right.
And we...
But we found this. We found this
Friday night was
this pub that was British themed. Perfect. Yes.
Yeah. Right. And we were like, oh, Radcliffe doesn't like to drink. Is going to hate this British themed pub.
It doesn't want to do karaoke.
Doesn't want to do karaoke. Yeah. This is going to be a terrible thing. But like, it ended up being like,
it was awesome.
So nice, and like we were crowd surfing people, and you did, yeah, Eminem.
I did Eminem.
You did a rap song,
and then Aaron also did. I have such a distinct memory of Aaron doing "The Bad Touch" by the Bloodhound Gang,
yeah.
And there was an old guy who like ran the karaoke bar who also viewed it as his duty to. Whatever the bracketed lyrics on the karaoke were, the backup, he would did that.
Right.
So he just did all the "I'm getting horny now" asides in that song, but like incredibly deadpan throughout and not in the energy that Aaron was bringing to it. It was great.
Right.
Was
and Paul really and I did night. "Summer Lovin'."
Yes.
No, but that was a real gift, because I remember, I remember Radcliffe, after you did it, the crew went crazy. The whole bar was like, holy shit, what is this? We were in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then you sat down and I was like, do you do that often? And do you remember what you said?
I don't. I dread to think.
You said, no, I never do that. And that was the decision. And I was, and you even said, like, I know that's going to be a headline. I know this video is going to be all over
I
the internet.
I suddenly realized I was being filmed when that
happened. Yeah. But you said, like, before you went up, you made a conscious choice, like, okay, this is going to be worth it. I am going to go up there, and I'm going, you know,
well, mm-hmm. a lot of not to get too deep, I don't mind talking about this, but like a lot, particularly like I was still like, no, it wasn't early, but I've been sober for a while then, and a lot of like being sober, particularly going to bars, being sober is like proving to yourself that you can still have a good time and do things that are enjoyable that you used to do when you were drunk, but not, but you can do without now.
Yeah.
So I think that was, sometimes you have to be like, I definitely was, and that's why Erin was up there with me as well. She was like, I'll go up and do the, because I was like, because also in Real Sim Shady, the chorus is long. There's a lot of repetition.
Yeah, she danced really well
on her own. And she was like, I'll get up there with you.
She's a good hype man.
Yeah.
No, but I thought it was like a really sweet gift. It was like a weird sacrifice.
Yeah. Something like a gift to the crew.
No, it was not. It definitely was not. That's the thing. The other thing I'll say about your sets and why like it was your, you know, Swiss Army Man was one of the best experiences was that there's like the bullshit hierarchy of the industry and the way just you're good people. You're not, everyone feels like they can contribute. Everyone is treated well. Everyone is, I mean, you know, it's a special thing to get to work on something like that because you can feel that everyone loves it. And I've been very lucky in my career. That is a feeling that I get to experience a lot. Like I I'm a very enthusiastic person and get to be the lead on a lot of things that I do. So that...
You set that tone. Some of that's your fault.
Well, it's a bit, but I think it's just also like, you know, people are so used to... This sounds like, you know, I don't want to talk to them about actors, but like, I think people are used to like actors being like over it sometimes.
Yeah.
And so like... I'm like just I really really like my job, and you guys also like love getting to do it, and I feel like it just, you know, the whole crew feeds off that, and it's just it was a really special experience. So yeah, I hope we get to do it again at some point.
Oh yeah, don't worry, things
are right. still annoyed that I was doing a play when you were doing everything.
Yeah,
I will curse that stupid play forever.
People have asked what the role was, which we can put in the podcast, which was it was to squirt the ketchup and mustard into Sunitha's mouth. It was like to be the hot dog dancer in the musical.
Oh, was it?
Because it was one day of shooting. Oh, it had been like so easy and fun to be
that
like.
Would have been great.
Oh, great! Like.
Yeah,
an incredible song and dance man, and it'd be so fun. You look on TV and you're like, oh, look at this musical in this world.
That's the thing. Even if I'd even been doing the play like in New York, we would have been able to. I think probably work it out because the structure of time off is different. You do the same amount of shows, but you get the Monday off. So like, I could have flown or probably, but yeah, I was doing a very very depressing Samuel Beckett play.
I remember, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Next time it will not
young.
Happen.
We are young.
I have an idea for part two of the podcast.
Okay.
Do you remember doing warm-ups every morning?
Oh, vaguely.
I thought we'd do a warm up, and then part two begins.
Okay,
we can cut it out if this is boring.
Yeah, okay.
This is, let's see if you remember shaking it out. This is what you. This would be so interesting.
This is
so
good. This is terrible for audio.
No, it's going to be so great. They're going to be like, wow, listen to them jiggle. So you raise your right hand, count to five, and jiggle it five times. Left hand five, right foot five, left foot five. And you do it four times, four times, four times.
I'm going to stand further away from the mic so everyone just.
And the idea is just like kind of get the blood flowing. I'm feeling kind of lethargic today, so I've just been thinking, I want to shake it out.
Yeah, also, you just did a whole
thing. I'm
day of shooting.
Doing it.
Yeah.
I'm doing the whole thing. You guys are just stopped.
Oh, right. Okay, here we go. Right hand up. You have to count when you go. Yeah. And. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 1, 1, 1.
Okay.
I had forgotten that.
I feel better. Thanks for indulging me.
No, that was great.
I feel like we got off track with the butt mold. Like, we mentioned it very, very bit early on, but then, like, have not been back to it. And I think that was the first time that we met in person, maybe.
I think so.
And you came to my apartment in New York, and then I bent over a box and got my balls in a sock to avoid the silicon catching onto hairs the Aaron's skin, and then just like assume the position for, I guess, how long does it take to dry? Like, not that long, like 15, 20
Do you
minutes.
Remember who applied the Vaseline?
Jason Hamer, right? Well, no, I don't remember who applied. I assume it was Jason, wasn't it?
No.
Who was it?
Because I remember...
Was it you?
The way I remember it is we asked... was it me? No.
Oh, no.
This might be another apocryphal story. You're going to fact check me right now. But I remember us being like, we don't have to do this. We can just mold a butt. And then you were like, well, whose butt? Like, and we were like...
Right.
And you're like, it should be mine.
Yeah.
And we were like, rock and roll, let's do it. But Aaron was there.
Oh, great. Okay.
And so I think the way I remember is that like Aaron came in to do the Vaseline. That way, like Hamer, who was our effects makeup guy on the very first time he's working with you, didn't have to like
get
right in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
That's for the next movie.
Yeah, and I was like, nice to meet you, Aaron. Here's your job for the day.
I remember two other things about that. I remember above your toilet in your bathroom was an Equus poster, which I thought was very funny. And, then the other thing.
There was, I for context on that, I used to live in that apartment with my parents, and they're very proud of me.
Okay.
So there's a lot of like Daniel Radcliffe stuff in that apartment over the years that is not in my new place.
Yeah. But see, your parents have a sense of humor to put the Equus poster right above, you know?
I don't think it was thought that way.
I feel like one of the funny things about you as a human being is, you know, everyone talks about child stars and how that is such a tricky thing to navigate, and somehow your parents understood that, you know, because your dad's a lit agent. Is
yes,
that right?
Yeah, he was a lit agent.
And I almost feel like that's something that we've been thinking a lot about more recently, is just the ways in which process and the structures and the incentive structures that we've built in our own industry, how can we make them kinder, more human processes?
Right.
And like,
whether
especially,
it's like the way we treat directors can sometimes incentivize being a butthead,
right,
you know, and the way we treat actors and below the line people can be so frustrating.
I have a lot of respect for your parents for knowing the dangers and then specifically carving out like, this is how I want my child to move through this pipeline or through the system. And it's unfortunate that hasn't been codified, you know. That's not a thing that's like expected in some ways.
Yeah, and there's no sort of blueprint for how to grow. Like, I do see myself as incredibly lucky, not just with my parents, but also with the crew of the Potter films that became like a second family. I was incredibly lucky with who they were and the people I was around that were like brought, like, that's the thing. Film sets have a really bad reputation as places for kids to be, but in my experience, and I know in the experience of definitely some other people that I know, they found it incredibly broadening. Like, you are introduced to a much wider range of people than I was in, like, you know, middle class upbringing in England.
It can be like a summer camp.
Yeah.
Which,
and that's
like, is what we try to set the tone for everybody, but especially kids, where we're like, well, you're going to learn something. Like,
right. Yeah. I mean, that's what it should be all the time. That even on serious films, like, there is no, obviously there are scenes that are intense and require, you know, somebody's process might require them to, you know, not be incredibly cheerful for that day or whatever, but there's, but generally speaking, we are in a fun industry and we have cool jobs and people who go out of their way to ruin that or make the lives of people, especially, I don't think a lot of actors, I don't think realize, and a lot of directors probably don't, like, I don't think the people who are sort of at the top of the hierarchy on sets a lot of the time realize how huge an effect they can have on people's lives. Because if you're with somebody for a month to 3 months, like, you can dramatically affect somebody's happiness. But if you are a dick to them every day, that will affect them. Like, yeah. And there are, you know, I've been really fortunate in my career to not work with too many of those people, but like, you hear stories a lot of the time, and it's just, it's so frustrating because there's no need for it, and it makes no one's, it just makes no one's world better. And I don't think that, like, I don't watch, like, you know, after we finish the press tour, I don't sit down and watch stuff I did back ever. The thing you're left with is, like, the memory and the experience that you had. Like, that's ultimately the thing that you'll be, you know, thinking about on your deathbed or whatever. It's not like, oh, I was really great in that one scene, that was totally worth making that other person's life of hell for that
totally.
Day.
Totally.
Like, right.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about, like, I'm super nervous about kids on set, and then the more I've thought about it lately, like, I'm like, oh, I think maybe the worst part is the press tour, not the set sometimes.
100%.
And that, like, we just have ideas for movies, and I'm always like, but what effect will it have on the kid to be in this movie? And it, and then I'm like, oh, the hardest part is that they're going to go back to the school. Real world afterwards. Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure I can make the set fun.
Yeah.
But then, like,
how would you protect them?
I mean, when they're in that way as well, that's why I was so lucky with Potter, was because I didn't go back to, I mean, I did go back to school occasionally, but I was always going back to filming. And so there was actually a lot of consistency. Whereas if you're, you know, if some other child star who is incredibly famous in one thing, and then they're like, okay, now you're on your own. Right. Like, that's really, that's a different thing altogether. And that's
so
really
hard. So you're saying
hard.
Either no movies for child stars or
just,
put them to
work. Like, hey, or they're just like a coal miner's schedule. Don't let them go home.
Air horn.
Keep them working 7 days a week.
But it is a conflict. I think that the press tour is the unnatural part, because that's where you're like developing your own identity as a kid, and suddenly you're getting this other identity that you are just getting reflected back at you from the world, that you're sort of going like, wait, should I be that? I'm not that. Am I that? Like, that's the part that will sort of mess you up.
That's such a, it's unfair for any, even now, as like, we're directors who made like an indie movie that some people know about, and like, I'm feeling that as a 30 something year old man. I can't even imagine.
He likes to keep his age a secret.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very, very self-conscious. I don't want people to think I'm old. But I can't even imagine doing that as a 12 year old, 13 year old. It's just, it feels, that's a thing that feels really like unethical and strange and like,
Do you have like takeaways?
Yeah,
like,
tips, hot tips for my son when I put him through this.
Either for the filmmakers or for the kids of like, oh, this worked and is really valuable, or this doesn't. I have friends who, you know,
yeah, I don't
just have cool daddy,
just have a cool
mom
and dad. And you know, obviously, like, it's easy to speak in broad terms, but like, treat them like a kid and not like an actor, because actors are treated in a way that is insane.
Right.
So, you know, you should, you know, not pamper them that much, but, you know, or be honest with them if they're being a dick in a way that a kid can be a dick. Like, you know, tell them that.
It's an expensive time out, but you gotta send them time out.
You gotta do it. I mean, you know, I remember, like, yeah, there was some, what else, I'm trying to think, like, if any other advice, but yeah, that's the thing, I always enjoyed it. That's the other thing that's like a key thing, is I feel like a lot of young people get started in it and then get to a point where they're like, I don't really like this anymore, but and then some of them are in a position where they've then become like the breadwinner for their family, essentially, at which point there's a pressure to continue, which I never had. Like, so it's, you know, my mum and dad asked me between every film, basically, are you still enjoying it and do you want to go back? And I was always like, yes, I hate school.
That's great.
Yeah.
I hate school.
I hate school so much, and I get to not be there with them.
But this is so funny. The funny thing about you is, like, I feel like anyone who gets to know you knows you love to learn. You hate school, but you love to learn. You're so curious. You're always thinking about things and telling us fun facts. Like,
my grandmother was like this.
Sounds so annoying.
No.
Telling us fun facts.
No. But
literally, the first call we had with you, we just like went off on tangents about. Space and.
You're right. Like you're so thoughtful about that stuff in a way that I find striking. I won't share your email to the world, but I remember your email was so specific, and we're like, what does that mean? And then you told us this whole elaborate story about like the historical thing. Yeah, exactly. And we're like, whoa, cool, fun fact.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a story about dinosaurs.
Okay, great. Wink, cool.
But I mean, I feel like that, like, to me, when I think of Radcliffe, I think of someone who loves to learn, but you happen to hate school, which...
It makes me think of my grandmother on my dad's side, my step-grandmother, but she didn't finish high school. This sounds like an insult, not a compliment. She didn't finish high school, joined a traveling country band, and then always felt somewhat insecure about that, and it led to her just being, like, a word like nerd and like loving like learning and loving talking about what she's reading lately. And and I, as a kid, I was like, man, she's my smartest relative, you know?
A teacher at school called me stupid when I was like younger than you should call a kid stupid. I mean, you'd never call a kid stupid.
Yeah. Was it on
like,
set?
No, it was not. It was
you're at, in school, school.
Before I'd done anything. It was like when I was like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Wow. And that definitely, I think, was a bit of a
you're
a,
like,
a positive
I'll show you.
Chip on the shoulder for a while. I was just like, I'm going to learn as much as I can. Fuck you, man.
Yeah.
All right. Drop some names. Who are we shaming? Just kidding.
Yeah, what's
I'm just
kidding. Let's listen. Our least favorite teachers.
Oh my god. No.
I'll talk about my favorites.
Yeah. Tell us a fun fact.
What are you reading?
What
lately?
Are you chewing on these days? Like, what's something that you're just like, oh god, I
are
wish
you
the
deep
whole
into a podcast.
Okay, we have a big audience here today.
Right.
What do you want the world to know?
Oh.
What's a fun fact?
I don't know. You asked about Aaron's dad and how is he into anime.
I mean, that's
so I'll share a fun fact about Aaron's dad, which he has a piano in he plays piano downstairs, and one year on his Christmas list was a bunch of anime soundtracks.
Whoa.
And we were like, okay, sure, we have to order them all from Japan, they're not available anywhere else. And
oh,
they were like, that's on CD at the time.
That's
and
great.
And he plays along to them, so he'll just like on the piano just like improvise like and like play along to anime soundtracks.
Wow.
Which
but
is like,
do you know the story of how he got into it? Because it's not, you know, a 65 year old man
I think
in
he's
America,
he's just like always been he's like a huge comic book fan. And I think eventually that just led to him hearing about like some animes that he got into.
That was
and,
the gateway drug.
Yeah.
And now he's really okay.
Yeah.
That's
and
great.
He's into yeah.
Me and Shiner are watching Neon Genesis Evangelion right now. Have you seen that?
I do not know.
Okay.
It's like Power Rangers. It's like kids piloting giant ships.
Oh,
you
but,
know, kind
but
of
it's
thing,
about like the trauma of having to carry that weight as children.
And it's
like,
really artsy.
Yeah.
Like
I feel like a lot of our work is so inspired by anime, which is probably why your dad connected to the movie. It's I feel like I don't know if we're ever going to do an animated movie, but like everything we do is basically something that should be animated, but we decide not to do. You know, it's like I don't know. But now,
what are you enjoying learning right now?
Ooh, okay. Fun fact. So
we all spend the podcast bragging about
know,
how
I,
we're all like nerds. And we're
like, I mean,
actually,
I have one. I have one. Okay, I just sent this to. So our friend Julia Pott, who's also British, she's
do you know her?
Yeah.
She's from that island.
There's only a couple of you. But I mean, the one thing that's funny about her that makes me think of you is you guys are both like American nerds, if that makes sense. Like
right,
you guys are
yeah.
very like in the same way that we have like Anglophiles here. You had what would a USA lover be? I don't know. She's obsessed with American pop culture. Anyways, me and her, like, we always joke that her love language is sharing fun facts. Like that's her. She's just that's all she does. She's always reading and finding things.
During COVID, she started like a weird Zoom date with a bunch of friends, and everyone take turns giving like 5-minute TED talks.
Yeah,
that's fun.
And it'd be like, what are your facts for the night? And
exactly,
it was great.
Useful,
very useful, like life changing.
No, but
5 minutes.
On the other hand, there's also incredible. Someone did a presentation about the history of birds used in murder case like trials.
Oh right, like talking birds
as witnesses. Mm-hmm. So it's like because the birds could repeat things.
It's like stop, don't hit
also,
me.
Like,
sounds like Radcliffe knows a lot about
this. Well, not about that, but just specifically like animal trials. We could go down a whole like medieval trials of animals are one of the funniest fucking things. We did one in the second series of Miracle Workers, but it's like a very, there's so many like pigs were tried for murder. Like, they would like excommunicate plagues of rats. They would do them all in absentia, but it would go through a court. So there were like court documents about them. It's very funny stuff.
I know what our next movie's going to be. Yeah. Sounds really
I've only just started reading this book that's like a history of sex, and it's like all the like weird tales about sexuality throughout like history. And like I just was skimming one chapter that was about impotence trials, where like women in like could only get a divorce if they could prove that their husband couldn't get it up. And so there was like a whole thing where someone would have to come in and she'd have to do like a really sincere job trying so that a like legal, you know, person could sign an affidavit and be like, nope, doesn't work, she needs a new husband, they can't have babies.
That's so interesting.
And I was like, what a traumatic
is incredible
but hilarious.
It's so rare that historical law is making the man feel shame. That's fascinating.
You don't hear about that often.
It's usually not that way around.
It's the other way around. So that's
totally
your fun facts are more fun. I was going to do one about Singapore. Singapore has these like zoning laws and this ordinance where basically anytime you build a new building, no matter what it is, whether it's a sky rise or like a school, 40% of the land has to be dedicated to green spaces.
Oh.
And so, which I'm just obsessed with this because LA is just like this desert. And I'm like, oh man, I wish that was something that we could actually do here. But you get these amazing sky rises that are just like covered in greenery and it looks beautiful. I'm like, oh, this is because it's all based on science where like green spaces, you know, make you mentally happier, healthier, and then also cools down the whole city. It's like one of the only ways
healthy employees do better work.
And also it's just like it feels like the only way that the urban lifestyle can be sustainable, you know, for the next 100 years or whatever. So like my whole thing I'm thinking about is like, okay, if I become rich, how do I make LA, at least my neighborhood in LA, very green? Can I make this like without using all the water? Because that's the other thing. Right. That's like, so anyways, that's where my brain is at. It's like very, it's so boring, but like zoning laws.
So boring.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Yeah. We're like, how exciting can you make that? How can you sneak that into our next action movie? Like,
We gotta just use the vegetables.
That's the thing you guys could. I remember like one of the like most, the insane things you ever said was, I was like, you said when we were making Swiss Army, you're like, I hate fart jokes, I hate like body humor, we hate like a cappella singing, we hate the song Cotton Eye Joe. And I was like, why did you make a movie that is just like comprised of all of those things? And you said, because then we know we have to make it really good for like us to like it. And I was like, wow, that seems just like the most insane way to try and do something.
Okay, good luck, guys. I'm on board though.
But great results. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the new movie we were, early on when we were writing Everything Everywhere, we were like, well, I mean, Swissy trying to make people cry at a fart was like a really like good challenge. It kept us busy, you know, like and engaged the whole time. So we're like, this time can we make them cry at taxes? And like the first draft had a lot more taxes, because we're like, what if the audience just feels, you know, the way they feel when Rocky, you know, like screams Adrian, but it's like filling out the W-2 properly and having it organized and sharpening your pencil and going through the receipts,
but
and
just,
your husband crying
just
as
finding that receipt that was necessary to get that write off that brings you down to the next level of the next tax bracket down, you know,
that
would save enough money so that you can actually save your apartment.
Right.
We're like, okay, how? So I read like
and then
two
we follow
or three
the money,
books.
Go into the local economy and like the tax dollars get spent on good things like schools and the kids are learning facts and the audience is just sobbing as taxes you know make everything better.
It didn't work, we scrapped
quite.
That yeah
but
not yet.
It's a good task.
Yeah.
Is, I mean that and you still like the laundry and taxes line is the line that I'm sure I speak for many people listening when I say that that's the line that broke me in the best way, like in a lovely way.
That sequence, I'll say this and we'll stop talking about our dumb movie, but that sequence is the only sequence that I've ever, because, you know, we love to edit as well. It's a big part of our process. And so during the pandemic, between the three of us two, Daniels and Paul, our editor, we just took turns editing different scenes. And that scene was one of the first scenes I chose to edit, because I'm like, if this scene doesn't work, then the rest of the movie's not going to work. So I got to make sure this works. And I was just like bawling. Yeah. It was like, which is
you just texted Paul and I, and you're like, what the fuck? I'm crying while editing. And we were both like,
never happened.
What? Yeah. And we're like, now I'm excited.
Yeah, but it was also because the pandemic had just happened, and like also we, you know, went through 4 years of Trump. There's like, there's a lot going on, and I was editing this thing, and I was like, fuck. Also, they were doing, like, the big thing was Key and Michelle gave such a good performance that, like, it was so indulgent. I would hold on these shots for so long and just cry and be like, oh, this is
great. He is amazing in the movie. Yes. I know, like, everyone's amazing, but, like, what he does in terms of, like, showing what the story is early on, like, the practicalities of, like, being people from different universes, like... It's so good. It was so cool to
watch. He was our Daniel Radcliffe on the set, which is a very
that is, you know, I will take that compliment.
But I mean that because you were our first feature film, you know, and on set you were this bubbly mascot's the wrong word, but
cool.
But absolutely. You were at the core of the energy where because like the first day on set you came up and you memorized everyone's name. You knew more people on our crew than we did, actually, which was
by day two
you knew their names better than we did, and you were going around just like chatting everyone up, getting everyone to know, and like
we were in the woods and you'd help carry things and people would be like, well, I'm gonna carry, I'm not gonna complain, like.
And so he was kind of like he and his wife Echo, the two of them were sort of like our spirit animals who just made everyone just feel good, giving people gifts, and Echo would cook soups and bring them to set. God, and it was like,
yeah,
which is like, so you should, I know, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's why we didn't bring you back. but you should meet Key, because I think you guys would have a really great time.
Yeah, he's the sweetest. A lot like that in person. He's very similar to his character.
Well, I do want to ask one thing, just because we alluded to it. You said as an actor, you will never feel that full fulfillment. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Two questions. Where do you find that fulfillment outside of the work? And then the other thing is, what are your plans for if you are going to do a movie, and like what are your goals with that?
So I want to
pitch it to us.
I want to write and direct something. Mm-hmm. I actually think I've never experienced the type of fulfillment you were talking about specifically, which is I think creative. I think I get a similar feeling from an insane day at work, and actually the more chaotic the day is. Like there were a few days on the Weird Al movie.
Can't wait.
That like there was one day where we were doing a bunch of musical numbers and it was like insane, and getting home feeling like you've done a good job and that you have maybe done something that like if I'm good, I don't like I'm never gonna look at my acting and be like I'm the best, you know. But the thing that I think that I am really that I am good at is being on set and being able to like, you know, go in. If you have a really demanding day, I will not be the thing that slows you down.
And you care about the story that's being told, like you were saying earlier, you're invested in,
and I do care about the end product as much as I think it's important that everyone has a nice time doing it. Like what it turns out like is very important to me, obviously. And so I think from feeling like you've done something that used all the skills you have, and doing it in a very intense way, that gets me close to that.
Can you spoil one gag from that, from the day that was the most exciting?
They weren't really gags. Yeah, okay. No, it was all just like...
There's one gag you told me about in Austin, but no. It's just been stuck in my head, you coming out of an egg, but I...
Oh, yeah.
Well, censor, bleep, bleep,
yeah,
bleep.
Yeah, bleep, bleep, bleep. Something cool.
I'm a huge Weird Al fan, I can't wait.
You're gonna enjoy it. And then, yeah, I just want to direct one day, because I feel like I love film crews, and I love being on set, and I feel like... being a director and getting to lead a set and getting to make a creative decision like every second of the day seems really exciting.
Yeah. Swiss Army Man wouldn't have worked if you and Paul weren't so smart, you know, like you guys, I mean, just like
Paul is ridiculous.
The four of us were like, but you guys came in and you're like, we'll help. We're going to help. Oh, you know, it's so pretty valuable.
It
makes so much sense that his movie turned out so wonderful.
Oh yeah.
That,
I mean,
that yours is also going to.
Well, thank you. We hope so.
Well, I think actors have this great advantage, which is why you're seeing so many actors and actresses become directors and doing a great job, is they get to see 10, 20 different directors work and see the differences, pick and choose what they think works best for them. And directors don't get to do that. I don't get to see what other people are doing. It's like kind of cheating.
And not with and not with just with directors, but with like every department. Actors are actually the best located person on set to learn about everyone's job, more or less.
Except
and they don't
editing.
Yes. Except editing. But like, and the production side.
My friends who are like yes. actors once they get in the mm-hmm. head, they're like, how, what is this? Now? What do I?
Yeah, yeah. That is.
I will say just before you go do your feature, mm-hmm. do one short film just yeah. so you can see what decision, what the ripples effects are of certain decisions on set,
yeah.
how it affects the edit, because yeah. I think that's one of the biggest things that will save you time and emotional, and anxiety, you know,
exactly. yeah. Yeah, or just exactly. go and ask Eric to let you just edit some of weird. Yeah, like, I need to learn this. Let's do a warm down exercise.
Oh yeah, how's that go?
So how about 3 seconds in through the nose, 3 seconds out through the mouth, and we do it 3 times.
Okay, it's gonna be great.
Yeah. And no laughing.
This is going to be so creepy in people's ears, guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Now really close
should,
to the microphone. They
should add like some really nice like sound bath mm-hmm. music here.
One last breath. And now see who can eat the cheesecake fastest. Cool.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank,
yeah,
you.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel.
This is
Daniel. Great job.
Thank you, Daniel.
It was really nice talking to you, Daniel. All
right. Well, until next time on our next episode of... What do we call this?
Oh, you wanted to call it Nominal Predestination.
Nominal Predestination.
We didn't do that talk. We have a whole podcast where people with the same name would meet and talk to each other about their similarities and differences.
Right. Nominal Predestination.
We'd have to have the same last
Speaking
name.
Of fun facts. Okay.
Nominal Predisposition is a fascinating thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Nominal, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine all the other Dan Radcliffe.
Teaser.
Sorry.
Cut.
Okay. The end. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
That was a natural
wrap-up. Very natural. I think the story to it is we should hang out way more often.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. The A24 podcast is produced by us, A24. Special thanks to our editor, Tom Wyatt, and Robot Repair, who composed our theme.